the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
And welcome to the program. It is the Bucket Strategy Investing Show. Great to have you with us. Got more to come this hour. We're hoping to answer just as many of your money questions as we possibly can. Professor Rick Plum here, naturally, helping out with the strategy portion of the show. I'm Johnny Dean. You need to take advantage of the years of experience and the knowledge that we got here in the studio, all right? And I mean, it's a lot. Between Professor Plum and me, we must have 25 years of answering of financial experience.
Interesting, because I've done
about 23 or 24 of those.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. Well, I used to like to say between Meryl Streep and me, we have like six Oscars. You know what I mean? It's amazing. Anyway, phone calls are coming up. They're just ahead. We're going to continue to answer your emails as well. That's coming up shortly. We just lost some people on hold. I hope you're okay. But if not, give us a call. We got some lines open right now. In fact, all the lines are open at the top of the show. 877-PLANNER, that's our number, 877-752-6637. As for those emails, you send those to us via our website that we call wealthed.com, WEALTH. Click on the Find Your Answer link right there near the top of the page. We'll answer them here on the program. Amazing how that works. Professor Rick Plum, certified financial planner, he's here with us once again from Lucia Capital Group. So if you got a money question or if you need a buckets plan done just for you, you can reach Rick or any of the advisors that we have on hand, 800-644-1150. They're the brain trust. That's what we call them. We're here to give you the help that you need. Again, the off-air number, 800-644-1150. That's the number at Lucia Capital Group. On the air, I mentioned this, we do have room on the phones. You reach us, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. I know you got a money question, and you know we got the money answers for you right here, 877-752-6637. I'll get this out of the way. I don't think I said this last hour, but the Powerball, and I'm not saying you should play it, and I'm only going to talk about this for 60 seconds or less, but if you're out there and you're thinking that your entire financial plan should be revolve around winning the lottery, as silly as that sounds, there are people that are like that. Professor Plum, and they make it part of their monthly budget. I didn't know them, but I read of somebody in they were in the Southern California area who doesn't make a lot of money, but they spend roughly $600 a month on lottery tickets.
That's not a good plan. Now, I will admit to playing the lottery. I play $1, so that tells you I don't play the Powerball, on each of two draws a month. So I spend, what, $2 a week.
They have a drawing every week. Is that how that works?
Two a week.
Oh, two a week.
So what's that?
Oh, right. That's a Wednesday and a Saturday.
I spend $104 a year. And while it's not part of my plan, I can think about winning it and think about what I would do with it. Never actually thinking that I'll win it.
Well,
but it's fun to play. It's excuse
me. It is. Now, there are those of us who have
a dream.
That's right. I've never played at all. But I've still thought about, well, you know, what if somebody bought a ticket in my name and I won?
You're really dreaming.
Can you really? Yeah. Now, here's what I want to.
Because if I bought a ticket in your name and that ticket won, it wouldn't have been in your name anymore. That would have been my ticket. And the one I bought in your name, that one lost.
Yeah, you see, and here's, and maybe I'll talk about this on Wednesday. It's when everybody's still going to be talking about it. When it's supposed to reach $1.3 billion. But if you're in an office pool, as many people are.
Know the numbers ahead of time.
Draw up a written. How many times have we seen this? And this happens a lot. You see an office.
Well, there was one just last year, early last year, where the individual won, or the supposedly the group pool won, but the person that was in charge of it said, "Oh no, the group pool didn't win. My own personal ticket won," but they didn't have a way to prove it won. I don't know the outcome of that one, but. There was a big fight over it because it was hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yes, and expect there to be a big fight. And you don't have to hit the jackpot. I mean, you could get five of the numbers without the whatever it is.
And still make a lot of money.
Well, it's like $1 million. I think each one of those gets $1 million or something like that. So if you've got 5, 6, 7, 8 people in an office and they all want to split that, I mean, that's a decent chunk of change. That's $100,000, something like that, before taxes. That's a lot of money. It's not the millions, but still, you're going to have somebody finding it. So I'll talk more about this on Wednesday. But interesting notions that Professor Plum brought up. And that's enough. I spent enough time on it. All right. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Okay, so it's 2016. You noticed that. I hope. Although I don't know where 2013, 2014, and 2015 went, but anyway, here we are, 2016. There are a few things that you can still do to help you out. Maybe not necessarily all of them related to taxes or helping you out as far as taxes from last year. But Professor Plum, you can still do a couple of things now. One of them, you can still make a 2015 IRA contribution, can you not? If you're in a company retirement plan.
If you are under full under required minimum distribution age all of 2015, and you are working, you can contribute. The question is whether you can deduct it. That's where people run into troubles. If you have a retirement plan at work or your spouse has a retirement plan at work, there are thresholds that if you make more than the certain amount of money, you cannot deduct it. You can contribute, you just can't deduct the contribution. And most people, the only reason they're contributing is to get the deduction, and so or to do a backdoor Roth.
Yeah, so it's too late if you somehow manage to figure out what your taxes are at this point. It's a little early, but maybe you have, and you say, boy, I should have made another, I could have made another $5,000 contribution to my IRA, and let's say you have a deductible IRA and you can do it, you're eligible to do that. Can you still say, well, I'd like to make a $5,000 deductible contribution for last year to help my taxes? Can you still do that or not?
Oh, you can. You can do that all the way up until April 18th of 2016 to be able to make it count, as long as you tell your IRA custodian that it was a 2015 IRA contribution. So you can do it. So you don't have to do it today, but you do have to look at the thresholds. Am I able to deduct it? Am I able to? Because, like I said, as long as you're working and you're under required minimum distribution age, you can contribute to an IRA. The question is whether you can deduct it or not.
Right. So do you have I used to know what the income limits were for both single and married.
Well, for a married person, if they make more than $98,000, they start at their adjusted gross income, married filing a joint return, and you're covered by our retirement plan. If you make more than $98,000, you start losing the ability to contribute and deduct. You can always contribute. You start losing the ability to deduct the contribution. Completely phased out at 118. Single individual, it's $61,000 is where you start losing.
And there's a $10,000 range.
That one's a $10,000 range. Yeah. That's if you are in a plan. Now, if you're a married individual filing a joint return and you are in a plan, but your spouse is not in a plan, then they may be able to make a deductible traditional IRA contribution, either from their own work or from your work as a spousal benefit to them, if their the adjusted gross income on the filing joint return is $183,000. So there is the ability if one of you is in a plan but the other one is not.
Explain, if you would. You're saying when you're in a plan, you're talking about participating in a 401k,
defined benefit plan, any kind of retirement plan at work.
Company
defined benefit
plan,
a pension, a profit sharing plan, what the old money purchase plans, a SEP, a simple, any of those kind of retirement plans at work. If you're a participant or the company is contributing on your behalf, it's not just me contributing to the plan, but if anybody is contributing to the plan on my behalf, I'm a participant in the plan, and that puts me into these rules where I could potentially lose my ability to deduct my contribution to my traditional IRA.
So if you just started putting money into a 401k in
December, now you're a participant
of last year, that counts for the entire year. You are now a participant. And if you've just put it in January of last year once, but you stopped, you're still a participant. And so that could
And even
limit
if you didn't participate, you said, I can't afford to take any money out of my paycheck, but the company put in a couple percent for you just because it's a profit sharing plan, or you've got a pension, the problem is for somebody like they work for a company that has a pension, but you have to be there 10 years to get the pension. And you work there for the first 8 or 9 years, and then you're not able to contribute to an IRA, but you leave and you also don't get the pension. But you are a participant. They were putting money into the plan on your behalf. You just didn't stay long enough to get it. And so
you're limited down now. You're now down to the 90,
well. You got to deal with the $98,000 for a married
was it
couple.
98 to 116
or 118. 118. $20,000 phase out.
Oh, so they actually give you
that one doesn't have a marriage penalty.
Wow, was that always the case?
Not always. No.
Wow, that's interesting. Okay, so but if you are a plan, but you are on a company plan, but your spouse is not, or they don't participate in it.
They're not a participant in a plan.
The couple, in this case, could still potentially put money into a deductible IRA for 2015.
For the for the individual who's not in a plan, assuming their adjusted gross income is under $183,000.
Yes. Well, you could. Yes. But the limits are a lot higher.
For now, the AGI limit.
Yes. You can do that up until the point. Now, if for some reason you're not in a and everybody's fine and you put it in for the year, and then all of a sudden at the end of the year, you wind up participating in a plan, you can't deduct it the following year.
Nope.
If you happen to be over those income limits.
But there are some business owners who right now for 2015 did nothing for 2015, could potentially do a tax-deductible traditional IRA and a SEP contribution for 2015.
Okay, well, there you go. Talk about some more things that you could be doing now that the new year is upon us. You could undo your Roth. There still may be room to do that. There's a retirement savers credit, perhaps. Any number of things. 877-PLANNER is our number, PLANNER. If you've got questions on this or whatever's on your mind, now is the time to call. Lines are open. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Don't go away. Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, answering your money questions, as we do every day on this program. 877-752-6637. We do have some lines open right now, so get them while you can. Ask your money questions. Emails, those are coming up in just a moment. WealthEd.com, our website, WealthEd.com. Click on the Find Your Answer link. And speaking of finding your answer, you could do so outside of this program. Another shot tomorrow, talking about Social Security. That's right. The Social Security Show with me, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, the two of us doing our program at WealthEd.com Tuesdays and every Tuesday, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern Time. It's only at WealthEd.com. By the way, you can also leave your question and in phone call form. There is an actual hotline that we call the Social Security Hotline, but you call, you leave your question, and we will take that and we will play it on the program and answer it for you. So that's a good way to get your answer on Tuesdays at 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern. That number, 800-838-0483.
Very good, right? John. Very good.
I've got 15,000 numbers in my head, and that's one of them. 800-838-0483. If you didn't get it, just go to WealthEd.com and write it down and give us a call and just leave us as much information as you can with your contact information, and we will answer it on the show. I should tell people who do call that hotline, by the way, if you just call and say, call me back at this number, we may not be able to do it because we don't really have the facilities to keep calling everybody back who doesn't leave their question. So please leave your question there and we'll answer it on the program. All right, that's tomorrow. Today, right now, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Lines open, so give us a call or email us as... I do want to get to Paul's email, but Paul, it was a long one in Davis, California, and I apologize we haven't answered it yet, but I need to figure out a way to shorten it on the air. So hold on for that. We're going to move to Gerald in Woodbury, Minnesota. I'm single with no heirs. My Social Security is $26,000. I have a pension for $14,000. My tax liability for 2016 should be almost nothing. Would it make sense to do a $50,000 Roth conversion from my IRA or variable annuity? Thank you.
Well, the variable annuity doesn't get converted unless it's already in a traditional IRA. The question is, should you be doing Roth conversions? And the answer depends on how much is in your IRA altogether. If your total IRA is worth $50,000, I would say no, because that's going to jack up your tax bracket. It's going to create a bunch of tax on Social Security that you're otherwise not going to pay based on RMDs being only maybe $2,000 a year. So I would not do it. Now, on the other side, if your IRA is $500,000 or larger, yeah, I'd start doing some, because your required minimum distribution is going to really affect your overall tax bracket for the rest of your life once you get to age 70 and a half, the year you turn 70 and a half. So it really is dependent upon the size of the IRA. The smaller the IRA, the less likely I'm going to do a large conversion. The larger the IRA, the more likely I'm going to do some conversion. You're right at the threshold. You're just barely into the point where you're starting to pay some tax on your Social Security benefit. You're in that, just the lower reaches of where you're adding 50 cents for every new dollar of income you show on your tax return. And so if your IRA is $50,000 and your required minimum distribution is going to be roughly two, you're paying a little bit of tax on some Social Security, but not that much. But if you do a $50,000 conversion, not only will that push you into a higher tax bracket than the 10% bracket you're currently in, it'll put you past the 15% bracket and into the 25% bracket, but it'll also subject 85% of your Social Security to taxes as well. that becomes a very large tax bill. And if that's the only thing you're doing is that one Roth conversion, and now you've got tax-free going on beyond that, it's not going to help you that much.
Is his Social Security at all, assuming this is all the income he has, is any of his Social Security right now subject to taxation?
Yeah, about $1,000 of it.
Okay.
So he's got about...
At the 10%.
Right. Well, and given what's going on, he's got $14,000 of pension income, mm-hmm. and call it $1,000 of his Social Security be taxable. So his gross income is $15,000. You know, he can probably, through a standard deduction, personal exemption, if he's 65, he's got a bigger standard deduction, he's probably paying tax on maybe $1,000 or $2,000 worth of income right now. Mm-hmm. So like he said, he's in a very low tax bracket. He's in the 10% bracket. But if he does a $50,000 conversion, now he's going to pay tax on probably $20,000 of his Social Security instead of one.
And
so now he's got $20,000 there, $14,000 of pension, and $50,000 of IRA. He went from $50,000, $64,000, $74,000, $84,000 as a single individual. That put him way into the really high tax bracket. So that only makes sense if he's got $1 million in his IRA.
Okay, so now you need to explain why. Because if if he has a $60,000 IRA and he's going to convert 50, you're saying that makes less sense than if he has a $500 or $600 or right. million-dollar IRA.
Because if I've got a $600,000 IRA or larger, then when my required minimum distributions start, I am now going to pay tax on my Social Security for the rest of my life. And if I can figure out how to maybe over a 5 or 10, 15-year period of time convert it and pay tax on my Social Security, then there's light at the end of the tunnel where I would be in a back to a 0% bracket after because there wouldn't be any required minimum distribution anymore. But if it's just going to be for 1 year and my RMD is very small where I'm not going to pay much in taxes, why do I want to pay a bunch of taxes today? So it's all about, and it also depends on his age. If he's 68, 69 years of age, it's not going to help him that much yet because he's got his RMDs in the next 1 or 2 years. If he's 60, or he's got Social Security, so he's got to be at least 62, unless that's a survivor benefit, then he's got some time that we can look at trying to decide whether or not it makes sense in the long run to do this. My guess is that his IRA is probably relatively small, mm-hmm. and he's looking at the RMD creating a little bit of tax on Social Security, saying, well, I don't want to do that. Should I pay it all in 1 year and then pay little after that? Or
see, I'm not sure, because he doesn't mention anything about the RMD. I'm wondering, and I like his thinking. That's Gerald in Woodbury, Minnesota. I like his thinking because I think what he's doing is saying, I got an opportunity here because I'm almost paying no taxes.
Right.
I'm in a very low tax bracket. So how do I spend the bracket? Is this a window of opportunity here?
It may be, but again, it
but
depends on
But I understand what you're saying. That's not the only factor.
If the entire IRA is $50,000, I don't want to do a $50,000 Roth conversion, because that's going to subject me to taxes. I won't. People get really freaked out about the required minimum distribution and the fact that it's going to be additional taxable income. I'm going to have to pay taxes on money I really don't want to pay taxes on. So I want to do the conversion so that I can avoid the tax on the RMDs. Well, the tax on the RMD in this case would be very, very small compared to the tax on the conversion, right, if his IRA is not all that large. But on the other side, if his IRA is very large, the tax on the required minimum distribution, when you consider the tax on Social Security and everything else, is going to be very large, and it's going to happen for the rest of his life. It may make sense at that point to accelerate and do even more than $50,000 a year to get yourself out of the situation.
Yeah,
it also depends on who you're going to leave this money to.
Because?
Well, if the kids are in a much higher bracket than you,
then maybe
it may make sense even to do some more taxes today than you would otherwise do.
So really, thinking about, as he's doing, thinking about what tax bracket you're in now and trying to take advantage of a low tax bracket is important, but it's not the only thing that you should be thinking about.
Well, you're looking at tax brackets today, potential tax brackets in the future. And when I say potential tax brackets in the future, that may not be just your tax bracket. Could be a surviving spouse's tax bracket, could be your heir's tax bracket. If the goal is to reduce taxes, it's not just, I mean, obviously a conversion is going to increase taxes, so we have to get the savings at some point in the future. If we don't have that savings in the future, it doesn't make sense to create the taxes today.
Exactly, and that's why advisors are so helpful. They can give you another perspective on this whole thing, something that you might not have thought of. Because there's a lot to think about, honestly. And if, you know, somebody who does it for a living can help you out, sure.
Absolutely. That's why we're here. 877-PLANNER, our number. PLANNER, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Got a whole lot more to talk about when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. We got some room on the phones, a little bit of room anyway, so give us a call. We'll get to the calls in just a couple of moments. I want to remind people, though, that coming up here in, a little more than a month, is the first workshop of the spring 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshop put on by Lucia Capital Group, featuring Professor Rick Plum, Terry Keyes, and some of the local advisors. The next one, or first one of the spring series, is Saturday morning, February 20th in Las Vegas. Just write this down. Keep it in the back of your head. We got some time, but you may want to sign up. Las Vegas, you go to wealthed.com. You can register there Saturday, the 20th of February. The following Saturday, Seattle, Washington, that's on the 27th of Feb, and March 12th in Phoenix, Arizona. Yes, we're a couple of months away from that, but as I said, just keep it in the back of your mind. Write it down. In fact, why don't you just go now, wealthed.com, and sign up. It's all free. We'd love to see you there. And the Brain Trust would like to meet you. I know you'd like to meet the Brain Trust. They're actually as nice in person as they are here on the program. And we had a suggestion, too, by the way, and we've had this before. This one was from Tom in Henderson. Love your show and will be attending in Las Vegas. Thank you, Tom. Suggestion, you've heard of the Chia Pets.
Oh, no.
You know where this is going.
No, I don't want to go there.
As a door prize, what do you think of a Lucia Pet? Yes, that's right. Now, he suggested a saying on it.
The compliance would probably have a fit with.
I know. Take our advice and watch your investments grow.
Yeah. Compliance is going to just.
Sure. All you got to do is pour water on them and they're going to work. Yeah. Hey, Tom, listen, I love the idea. We
did that in the 90s once.
Didn't we do that once? A long time ago.
20-some years ago, we actually had the. It was on the radio show. We gave it away.
That's right.
A Lucia Pet. It was just a Chia Pet that we called a Lucia Pet. It wasn't that we went out and modeled, somebody's head and made them grow hair.
Yeah, but anyway, so it's a nice idea, and thank you for that. We appreciate clever listeners like that. Okay, 877-PLANNER. Let's get back to the phone lines. We'll get to some more of these emails coming up. 877-752-6637. Margo is next, though, in Allentown, PA. Margo, how can we help you today?
Yeah, hi, I love that Lucia Pet idea.
Yeah, see, there's another vote for it. I don't know, maybe we got to bring it back. Margo,
so should
and
we
Tom?
Mold a head, make a bust of your skull and use it, your hair growing up?
You could very well do that. That's right. Maybe I'll have dark hair again. I don't know. Margo, how can we help you today?
Well, I called a couple of weeks ago and spoke to Rick about gifting to my grandchildren the inheritance that I was going to give to them instead of waiting until I'm gone out of fear that should I need to go into a nursing home, it would be taken by Medicaid or whatever. And I've come up with an idea, and I wanted his take on it. Now, we're not talking a whole lot of money here. I'm talking maybe $10,000 a piece. But I thought of buying a CD for each of them, paying for it, and putting it in their name for a five-year CD. And then each year they would be able to take the interest that had accumulated during that year so that it would delay their getting their hands on this money a little bit early, but at the same time they would get a little gift every year. What do you think? Do you see any problems with this?
Maybe. So we're going to open an account in their name and create a CD, a five-year CD in their name. And then what's to stop them, though, 3 months in, 4 months in, from cashing out that CD?
Thing to stop them from doing that. And if they do, then that's on them. But quite frankly, I'm not sure they even know at this point that they would be able to do that.
Well, I mean, and that's the problem. It's their money. It's their control. And if they wanted to cash it in, it's not going to wait there for 5 years if that's the underlying issue that you want them to wait. But if you're okay with them cashing it in, if they were to say it, then that's up to you.
Okay.
$10,000 is not going to create any problems, and now you've got the clock ticking on your gift, so that if you don't go into a nursing, don't need nursing coverage or home health care, Medicare, within the next, depending upon your state, I don't know where Pennsylvania is on their look back, either
5 years.
Five years, so that starts the 5-year clock ticking. And just, you know, one thing you said before, Medicare doesn't take the money. Medicare just requires you spend the money on the nursing facility. Rather, they don't take it from you.
Oh, no, it's Medicaid.
Medicaid doesn't take it from you. They make you pay for your own nursing care until you run out of money.
Right.
Then they'll start paying.
Exactly.
They don't take it from you up front.
No, I understand that.
Okay. A lot of people don't. They think, well, I've got $100,000 in the account, and I can only have $2,000 when I go in. So Medicaid is going to take my $100,000. No, the nursing home is going to take your $100,000.
I understand.
So, but yeah, no, it works as long as you don't worry about them running off with the money and doing something else with it within the next 5 years. Because the reality is,
you know, it's better than, I feel it's better than just gifting them the $10,000 right off the top. Maybe they'll hold on to it for a couple of years anyway.
Well, yeah, maybe. And, you know, how old are these individuals?
29, 24, and 19.
Okay. Are they, specifically the 19-year-old, are they working?
They're about to graduate from school, college. Okay.
Well, once they start working, I would say instead of putting it into a CD, let's take $5,500 or whatever they're earning up to the limit and put it into a Roth IRA.
Oh.
And that has a little bit more of a barrier, at least an emotional barrier to the money. And they can invest it a lot of different ways. And I would, given their ages, and hopefully that if you don't want them to touch it for a while, put it into something that they don't think they can touch for a while. A CD, it's cash. A Roth IRA is a retirement account. And if they hold on to it for 5 years, they can use it for a first-time home purchase. But they do have to be working to be able to do this. I like the idea of putting in a Roth and maybe growing it rather than the CD. But the CD works fine.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Margo, thank you for the call.
Of course, you could put the CD inside the Roth IRA, too.
That's
true. As long as the person's working.
That's true. What she's looking to do, again, is...
She's looking to get it out of her name so that if she ever goes into a nursing home, it's past the five-year look back and Medicaid will pick up a majority of the tab.
Yeah. She said Pennsylvania has a five-year look back.
Right.
Explain what you mean by look back.
Well, anytime that you're worried about long-term care issues, nursing home, and the government does pay the care cost for people who have no other money. But if you are a single individual and you have more than, call it, $2,000 in investment savings in other areas, the federal government's not going to pay for you for your long-term care. So a lot of people will say, okay, dad's going into a nursing home, you know, now, but they've got this CD for $100,000. How do we get it out of their name so that they don't have to spend their money on their care and we can inherit it, but we can get Medicare to pay for it? Well, one way is to use a gift. Now, the federal government's a little bit smarter than that. You can't just make a gift of X amount of dollars today and then apply for Medicare tomorrow, because that's kind of what they call a step transaction, really. The only reason you're doing it is to get the Medicare. So they put a time horizon on it. A gift that's made within a certain time horizon prior to applying for your Medicare is going to be brought back into the estate as if you still owned it, and then you will have to, you're ineligible to receive federal funds until such time as that money would have been spent in the first place. So depending upon the state, California's fighting it a little bit harder than Pennsylvania, I guess. California, I think, is still at a 30-month or maybe a 3-year look back. So the federal guideline is that there's a 5-year look back period. If money is transferred out of your estate to other people within a 5-year period of time of applying for Medicaid, they're going to look at it and say, okay, how much money was transferred? And then take the average cost of a nursing home in that particular area. You take the amount transferred divided by the average cost of a nursing home in that area, and it comes up with a number, and that's the number of months that you're ineligible for Medicaid going forward, because they figured that should have been there. It should have been paying for your care. Therefore, we're not going to pay for it until you use it up. But once you get past the 5 years, Pennsylvania is five, many states it's 5 years. Once you get past that, even if you gave away a bazillion dollars after the 5-year look back, it's not counted. If you made yourself, you know, broke by the time you go into nursing home and it's been a long enough period of time, they're not going to look back at the transfers.
Okay, so now wait a minute. So if you gave all this money away 4 years ago in this case, and you had a year left and you went into a facility and you had no money, but they said, well, you gave it away 4 years ago, they're only going to make you pay for the first year?
Not necessarily. They go back and they look at how many months. So if you gave away $1 million and it divides out by, let's say the average cost was $8,000, and so it comes out that you would have had enough money to pay for like 120 months. They'll make you ineligible for Medicaid for a long time.
Yeah.
So what happens is you better have some strings on that money you gave away in case you go in too soon. You better get some of that money back because you're going to need it to pay for your long-term care stay for a little while.
So even if you miss it by a few months where it was,
you could miss it by a lot. Now, it used to be that it was maxed at the three-year look back, the 30-month look back, and that the ineligibility period didn't extend any longer than that. But they've changed the federal guidelines to where it can extend even further than the look back period. I mean, if the ineligibility once they do the calculation.
So the idea is they want you to use all of your money.
They want you to use your money if you have money to pay for your own care.
Okay, there you go. All right, and there's some people that have moral issues with all that. We're not going to get into that. Those are just the rules. Those are the rules. We do have a little bit of room on the phones. If you have a money question, you better get your question in now. Better get your call in now because we've only got another segment or so coming up. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Got our trivia of the day as well. When we come back, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, it is Bucket Strategy Investing. Don't go away. Bucket Strategy Investing, we're here talking about your money. 877-PLANNER, our number. If you want to call, you better call quickly because we just got a few minutes left in this hour. 877-752-6637. Some emails coming up as well. I think David, did we lose David, right? Okay. All right, well, give us a call back. I know you had a follow-up on the long-term care comment that we had a moment ago. All right, so now, before we get to the next call, I want to remind you, coming up tomorrow on the show, we're going to be talking about college savings plans. We haven't talked about those for a little while, but they're important because have you seen how much college costs?
The January tuition bills are coming due for the spring semester.
If
they haven't already been pounding your door.
I think they've probably already been sent or there's online or something.
It's online.
There are those who finished college. Let's see. That was August, September, November, December, January. Yeah, so for those of you who were late graduating, maybe in the summer, in July or August, you're going to have to start paying some of those bills now.
November was the big month for most student loans for people to graduate
June.
In May.
That's right, because they'll hold off for 6 months, but then you got to start making those payments. So how do you pay for college? All right, first of all, should your kid even go to college? That should be another discussion that we're going to have as well. But there are ways to pay for it, ways to make it cheaper. There are ways to get certain grants, certain programs. The American Opportunity Credit comes to mind. A lot of things that people don't know about. So we'll tell you about those tomorrow on this very program. And speaking of college, this is why we're talking about this tomorrow. I've got this bit of trivia for you today. This from the Brookings Institution, who says former college students take, on average, 13.4 years to pay off their student loans. Thus, the average 22-year-old graduate will be almost 35 and a half years old before being debt-free of student loans.
That can make buying a house a little bit more difficult.
Can it? I don't know because I went to college when it was, it was a whole lot cheaper than it is now, and I went to a state school.
In-state.
So ours was University of California when I went to was way cheap. I mean it was almost nothing. Couple of thousand bucks a year, I think, at the time. But anyway, so I don't have this, but I can't imagine being 34 years old or 30 in my early 30s and still paying off this debt from 10, 12 years ago that I incurred. It just seems like an awful shame to have to do that.
Yeah, a lot of people, unfortunately, do carry a lot of debt. It takes a lot. If you don't have somebody who's paying it for you, what else are you supposed to do? Unfortunately, the society's basically forced everybody into school, and
they have, haven't they?
There's not very much else out there. I mean, the trade schools aren't anywhere near as prevalent.
Well, I mean, the trade school is an excellent way to go. I find it curious because, as you said, there's a lot of, especially over the last 20, 30 years, it seems like, maybe for even longer than that. A big emphasis on college education, mm-hmm. Get your education.
It's kind of like the new high school.
It really is. And what I find interesting is that we have free education up to the 12th grade, and then it stops.
Well, it's available, but not everybody
Well, no, no, but you can. You have the right to go to the local public school and get an education, and you do that from kindergarten all the way through to the 12th grade. And we're talking about, boy, it's sure important to get that, you know, 13 through 16 grades. And yet, not only is it not free, it's outrageously, outrageously expensive.
And it makes it difficult to do anything afterwards. It's more, most younger individuals, I mean, not picking on them, but they have a car payment. And the car payment may be $300, $400, $500 a month. And they've got a student loan payment of a couple $100 a month. And then when they look at what they're earning and they're trying to create the, you know, the appropriate ratios for buying a house, they can't buy a house. Plus, there's no starter houses out there anymore.
Yeah, that's the other problem. Try to find yourself a $100,000, which is still a lot.
Well, depending on where you live, that's
a small, let's call it, you know, maybe 800 square foot, whatever it is, starter home that you can get on the cheap.
You can't. They're just not out there. Unless you go back to something that is in the outskirts of town, lesser part of town, and was
old.
Built in 1952.
Exactly. They just don't build them anymore. When was the last time they built any 800, I mean, on a large scale?
1,200 square foot, 1,500 square foot.
Exactly. 1,500, you might see some of those. But everything that you see now, all the new stuff being built, what is it now? 3,000 square feet you're seeing, 3,500 or more in some cases?
For the planned communities and such? Yeah,
exactly.
You don't see the 1,200 square foot, 1,000 to 1,200 square foot.
No, you don't have.
You know, three bedroom, two bath.
You don't have that.
Two-car garage house.
You don't have the Levitt town anymore. Remember from out in New York. You don't have the post-war, because that's what everybody did. You know, the soldiers came home in World War II, and what did they have? You know, they came home to, that's why you have these smaller homes that are old. They, you know, what did they have? 800 square foot, like I said, 1,000, 1,200 square foot. Starter home, cheap enough. They could get a GI loan.
I mean, you look at some of the older parts of town, and most of the houses are two-bedroom, one-bath.
Yeah.
When was the last time a two-bedroom, one-bath house was built new? I mean, other than a granny flat on the side of
mansion. No, that's what it is. You have a little bit of land in the back, and so you want to squeeze that in. That's your guest house back there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it might
or
have
your dog house when you get in trouble.
But whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But the point is that it's becoming very, very tough to afford. So. No,
and it's hard for people coming out of college where the jobs are tough to get to begin with, and they're carrying this debt. It just wears on them mentally that it's, you know, they're not getting where they want to be, let alone think that, you know, been brought up to be entitled to be.
Yes.
Forget that part of it.
I remember because we took student loans out for my wife's when she went and got her teaching credential. And that was I think it was over the course of 4 or 5 years that we were paying it back. This was a long time ago, 20 plus years ago. And I remember as I was writing checks, you know, 4 years after she had already finished, I remember thinking at the time, man, that was a long time ago, and I'm still paying for this stupid thing. I mean, it helped because she was teaching, but at the same time, it just seemed like, and that's why I can't imagine being 34 and still paying, or 35 and still paying for a debt that I incurred when I was 18, 19, 20 years old.
Yeah, my daughter, who got her teaching credential, took out a loan to get that, but she's, you know, trying to have it done, paid back within the first 2 years after graduating and getting her job. She's very high, way on her way. She's almost done with it, which is congratulations.
You can do that. And now for us at the time, though, you know, young family, you know, got a mortgage, a house.
She doesn't have the family yet.
How much? Not yet. Someday. Yeah. But how much, how much extra money did we have to put away? So anyway, I'm glad I went to school when I did. My parents are really glad I went to school when I did, because trying to pay for it now is awful. Anyway, we're going to be talking about that tomorrow, ways to save for college on this program. We're out of time. What happened? Okay, if you need the Brain Trust, you can get in touch with the Brain Trust, whether it's on any of the topics that we talked about or not. It doesn't matter. You can talk to any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Their phone number is 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. Talk to them about your bucket strategy. We really didn't get into the buckets thing. We may get into that tomorrow. That's a good thing to think about, good thing to talk about, your buckets strategy. All right, again, 800-644-1150. That's all the time we have for Professor Rick Plum. I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, Canada, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.